This is the Media Freak Podcast, the latest, greatest, and newest podcast created by media people who are just a little bit freaky. We're not the big dogs, we're the ones in the media trenches who tell you how it really is. Each episode, you'll hear from us with a roundup of media news, our expert guests, and some anonymous sources about the freaky world of media. So who's on the mic? It's me, your host, Harriet from Publicis, Jack from Craft,
Feliz Navidad,
Bookie from Wavemaker,
what up?
And Charlie from Show Heroes.
That was quite a quick one. And also, I didn't manage to distract you this time.
I know, you were
in the zone there.
I was literally like, I had already planned what I was going to say and I stuck to it.
Nice. Well done.
This week's podcast comes from, you've guessed it, it's Craft Media London.
Finally.
Where employees put the craft back into communications and media planning. For those that don't know, this is Jack's stomping ground.
I was going to make a joke about that being written on my underwear, but stomping ground is not, yeah, anyway, never mind.
So how do you feel about having the media freaks here with you?
It's quite weird. It's a little bit like when you have friends from another school over and they meet your friends from your actual school, kind of weird.
So we've been getting the inside scoop about Jack, but more on that to come later.
Ooh.
Kidding. Anyway, in today's episode, we talk Xmas ads, Evan Shapiro's analysis of Barb data, and discuss whether marketers really are ready for the post-millennial ad age. But first, it's News Roundup. In the luxury category, Italian fashion brand Gucci has reportedly suffered a sales slip of 25% in Q3. We hear that Gucci is set to diversify its use of media channels to get back on track. But from a media standpoint, where do we think Gucci has actually gone wrong this year?
So luxury is having a particularly tough time at the moment. I think mainly because of the macroeconomic climate, first and foremostly, everyone's kind of tightening their belts and luxury is always the first to go. But I think when you look in the case of like Gucci, they specifically said that the downturn in APAC is affecting them kind of like more than it would usually. I think luxury really grew over there when like places like China and India were growing. So all of a sudden there's a huge demand. Now when all of that slows down, we end up with people like Gucci who maybe are not using their media as wisely as they could do in a situation like that. So I think, it's a tough one. I think 25% on quarter three this year, I think it was 15% year on year, 2023 versus 2022. So they are kind of slipping down. But then you look at LVMH, they are investing big bucks in their marketing. So I don't think they need to make their media more efficient, but I think they just need to take a couple of big swings and grab a little bit of cultural capital.
Anyone know what's happening in January 2025 when it comes to Gucci?
New CEO, isn't it?
Yeah, but what positions has he held? Held.
Right wing.
And it was LV as well, wasn't he?
Yes, but more specifically, the new CEO formerly held positions in communication and marketing. So we obviously know what we're talking about.
That's really interesting, actually, because a couple of years ago, I think there's a publication called Raconteur, and they're basically B2B, and I read a lot of their articles, and they were talking about where CEOs hail from, what backgrounds they've got. And CMO or communications and marketing don't often go into CEO roles. So very exciting and interesting to see that becoming a thing as we obviously, as you say, we know what we're talking about.
I think building on your point there, Bookie, with the APAC stuff, China actually makes up 50% of global sales for luxury. So that,
mad.
Obviously a massive, massive amount. And they're still recovering from going through a bit of a sort of post-pandemic crisis and also a property crisis with Evergrande, which is not the same as Evergreen. Which, you remember when that ship got stuck in the Suez Canal?
Yeah, they made a deal with the boat.
Yeah, but on sort of less fun news, like a big property company folded, and so they're really, really struggling to sort of bounce back. So making up 50% of the market, clearly that's having an effect. And weirdly enough, China seems to prefer French brands over Italian brands. So I think they did a poll and 29% of people preferred French luxury brands as opposed to 19% Italian. So clearly those two things together are having a bit of a problem.
Okay, well, you've lost me completely, so let's move on. In the food and beverage category, it's no joke. There's a celebrity showdown, or should I say snowdown.
Oh, Jesus.
In the supermarket this Christmas. It's more tragic when I laugh at my own puns.
Man.
But that's right. Waitrose has teamed up with UK pop group S Club 7 in a desperate bid to tap into early noughties nostalgia. Similarly, Lidl is bringing in singer-actress Martine McCutcheon with Ooh, Ah, Just a Little Bit in their latest Christmas ads.
That was quite good.
That was really good, actually.
Thank you. Thank Harriet Davis.
So question for you is, do we expect a paid media push of this kind of celebrity content to drive positive engagement for Q4? Or did Lidl and Waitrose simply waste their creative budgets?
Before Jack speaks, I just need everyone to know what his eyes look like right now. I've never seen a more furious eye contact.
No, it's just because it's what we're recording this in October, and we're having chats about Christmas ads. And frankly, I am Scrooge until the sort of 23rd of December. I think what's interesting about it, before I get on my sort of high horse about ads coming in too early, is the fact that celebrity and music are both very, very solid mnemonic devices. They're actually very underutilized as well. Obviously, celebrity is, you know, reasonably used, but like music in particular can be an amazing hook for an ad. And so they both obviously cottoned onto that. But I think there's quite a gulf in the sort of knowing way that one has used it and the other one's kind of missed the mark for me. I thought Lidl was kind of lo-fi, made for social, knowingly a bit tacky, very tongue-in-cheek, and it just kind of, it feels very of the time. It's an extension of a strategy that they've used before, which involved music, so they used like East 17 before. They've also kind of used a variety of different approaches on TikTok where they get people to, you know, make their own songs, etc. But with the Waitrose one, they've tried to be very Waitrose and they've done it really high production values. The unfortunate, I feel kind of bad for S Club 7 because it's super HD on it, and I'm like, God, you guys, like, you can really, you know.
You know, they're like R8.
Yeah, are they?
I don't know how old.
Rachel Stevens is not, oh yeah, much, much older than us.
Okay.
Like, you know, Ben's age.
All right, yeah. Producer Ben does.
Producer Ben, yeah. I think, you know, also, if you're going to be picking an early noughties artist and you're Waitrose, are you really denoting quality with S Club 7?
Good point.
I don't know. I think it's two of a similar approach, one executed much better than the other. But, you know, I wait to be proven wrong.
I will agree with you.
Blimey.
I know. I will agree with you. I actually loved the Lidl version. I thought it was perfect. It was perfect for, I think, our demographic, firstly. I think anyone older than us as well. Waitrose, I do want to give them their props for trying. I think they...
Are we in the business of that?
Yeah, I mean,
no,
yeah.
A little bit. Because, like, look, because otherwise no one tries anything
award.
Unless they get it right. And then if they don't try anything unless they get it right, people often don't try anything. So...
It is a brave one for them.
It's a
But it's a copy and paste of what Lidl has just done.
But did they... you're assuming they knew what Lidl were doing.
Well, no, but I mean, it's not anything different...
But they didn't know.
It's for the number one range. They're talking about the song with number one. They tried to kind of bring it along with the Jax Jones remix. I started by saying that I think it's too early for Christmas advertising. But, I mean, there's some research from the Advertising Association, so definitely not biased at all, that suggests that 70% of people aged 25 to 34 find Christmas ads to be the ultimate festive mood booster. I mean, I think we can probably take that with a sack of salt.
I don't know about the ultimate, but just before we move off Christmas, did anyone see that Greggs is opening up a champagne bar between October and December?
Greggs?
I was absolutely gassed. I'd logged on. I was willing and waiting to book my tickets. It's in bloody Newcastle, guys.
We'll go together. That can be our Media Freak Christmas jolly.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean,
let's
that
go.
Could be, I prefer to pair my Greggs with a Kestrel Super.
what's that?
I'll buy you one later.
Neck oil vibes?
It's like sort of 9%, real sort of park bench stuff.
Frosty Jack's old brother.
Anyway, let's move on. In out of home news, in the automotive category, Ford has reportedly secured a grant to serve targeted ads inside of their cars. So an in-vehicle advertisement presentation system can actually display ads. Go on.
You should have started this segment by saying, this week on Dystopian Nightmares. Like, can you imagine trying to have a quiet drive in your car and you've got, ooh, just a little bit, ooh,
I think that will be brilliant. But the technology will also be able to serve targeted ads through audio signals. So you can think about what audio signals mean.
But it listens to you. That's the point,
exactly,
isn't it?
Exactly,
It listens to what you're saying in the car and I don't know about that. I think it might fly in America.
Well, it could fly here, but do you think it will be the death of the drive time radio or the evolution of drive time advertising?
I think neither. I mean, look, we have to understand our place in this world, right? Look, we as advertisers, we grease the wheels of capitalism. We know in an online video.
Here we go again.
Yeah, I'm not going on a rant. Don't worry.
The red flag's descending behind him.
Radio adverts pay for the radio stations, right? The things you see online pay for an open web. But this really feels like it's doing nothing more than sort of just tying consumers down and punching them in the face. Like I don't think with this knowledge that you would buy that car, right?
Yeah, like, I mean, I'm already being
unless
put
it
off
was
forward.
Cheaper.
Ooh, yeah, okay. Ooh, free petrol.
Oh, we're going back a couple
value
of
exchange.
Yeah. CTV thing.
No, I'm going like if it's cheap, like the value exchange. It changes now. If you're telling me that, you know, if I'm going to lease this car or finance this car, but it's going to be slightly cheaper every month if I take the ad subscripted model.
Very clever.
Sign me up.
I mean, I think in the article it said about it being more of a potential for automated vehicles. So like in the future when we're all, being driven by the robots, we can have it rather than enjoying a nice film, we can enjoy one of Bookie's ads.
It's nice to see Ford get ahead of the game because I would have thought this idea or grant would have gone to Tesla.
It feels very Tesla, very Musk.
I saw a very like manual version of this a couple of years ago on the award circuit.
As opposed to automatic.
Shut up. No, but I think it was Skoda who basically installed tiny little out-of-home boards in parking spaces of like car parks and stuff. So when you were reversing into the space, it would come up on your little camera and it was an advert for Skoda, but depending on whatever car you're in, this is a nice development.
I think that's smarter.
It feels clever. I thought that would appeal to you and your comms planning.
Moving on, in social news, in a bid to reduce toxic dynamics and trolling on social media, footballer Harry Kane launches a new app designed to change how sports stars connect with their fans. The app, named Cleats Club, reportedly offers positive engagement with verified updates from stars and exclusive content. So are we likely to see a rise of community platforms such as this in the future? And what will it mean for advertisers?
I kind of feel like we've seen the rise and potential fall of some. And Harry Kane's just like, I've got this idea. Terrible name. Cleats
Club.
Awful.
So bad.
Cleats. I had to look up what it was. That's what they call football boots in the
States.
You
know what cleats were.
Nah.
Mr. Henry VIII nonsense. You read every history book, you never saw the word cleats.
But what, is that a historical word for football boots?
It's just an old word.
Is it? My cleats.
It's not well, it's not very well used. Good. I looked at it and I was like, why have you come with that name? Surely you're not
taking it. I seem to have soiled my cleats.
You're not messing
up. Handbags and glad rags.
It's probably a nice idea. It's a noble mission, but it's very footballers out and not very audience in. You're going to be asking for massive behaviour change with, you know, basically the draw of, getting what you can always already get anyway on things like YouTube and what have you.
I don't know about this, though. I know, Bookie, we'll come to you. But obviously with the recent news about Instagram putting the curfew in place for younger audiences, this may be an opportunity for those younger audiences that can no longer access platforms at certain times to connect with their stars when they couldn't. So I wouldn't necessarily say it's a, you know, dead-end idea.
An opportunity for Harry to talk to the kids.
Do you think I've been on it, Charlie?
Well, it's out.
Yeah, I went on it today.
How's Harry? Is he all right?
He's doing great. Although, my thoughts on this kind of thing was, like, you know, obviously that there are big problems in the social media world, let's say, and we all know them. But do we really want sort of like a sanitised walled garden version? Is that going to offer us any value? So I went on it and I decided to make my own decision. And I found out that Harry had responded to someone's question about what he had for lunch. And I thought, oh, this looks like an honest answer. He might have actually written this. And it was chicken, potatoes, green beans, broccoli, and some gravy sauce. So definitely an English meal. But who says gravy sauce?
Gravy sauce?
So it's a social media manager.
Yeah, you're he's got a German suit.
Yeah.
I mean, I love gravy sauce.
Bucky, you were saying.
So that actually plays into my thoughts on this, because I personally do like it as an idea. I think we have seen the rise and fall of some of these, like, you know, ethical social medias. But as this has a point of view, or it has a space that it's already existing in, which is football, I think it might have some legs. People are quickly turning their back on X. It's even too toxic for some of the people who didn't mind how toxic it was. So then they don't have a place there anymore. And it was a huge companion for, like, live sport and live events. I think it also brings in some elements from women's sport, because they are very much more accessible and socially accessible than our kind of like the male counterparts are. That's a huge part on that. And then the last part is, I thought that if he worked in a digital AI twin to then be the person responding for him, so your call out of them calling it gravy sauce suddenly means that maybe he has already got an AI twin who is the person existing on that platform for him.
I was like, well, if he's faking being himself through AI, which is just cynical, then screw Harry Kane.
I think we've come onto this before, but that really breaks that, like, Gen Z looking for authenticity view of things.
Kind of, yeah.
He probably should have scored that penalty anyway, and then he wouldn't be in this predicament.
In other media news, what is the true reality of screen viewership in the UK these days? So Barb, a key audience measurement organisation within the prominence within the UK media landscape, teamed up with a media big dog from the US, Evan Shapiro, to review this data. Now, Jack, I know you've been a bit of a nerd, as you usually are, about this stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm going to hand over to you to talk about it.
Yeah, so Evan Shapiro calls himself a media cartographer, so literally media landscape sort of stuff. But he's worth a follow for his kind of analysis of all of that sort of thing. He speaks at various conferences, South by Southwest, etc. And he's teamed up with Barb and done a kind of a four-screen measurements thing via the Wi-Fi, I think it is. So it doesn't take into account viewership outside of the house. But what's really amazing is for years Barb was just broadcast TV, and you were looking at, you're on Den or whatever trying to get your TVRs, but now it takes into account VOD streaming, all the different platforms like SVOD, and it's like a little box that goes on the back of the telly, and indeed on the Wi-Fi router, so that it can tell when you're on TikTok and things like that. So rather than just read you off a load of stats, I thought I'd prepare another quiz. Ooh. So allow me to don my giant sequined jacket, as always. So these aren't really for individual, I think maybe just answer together. I was going to say, for 2024, can you rank the top five video platforms, channels, services from 1 to 5 for people aged 16 to 34? Okay. So most viewed to fifth most viewed.
Any device, just video?
It's just a video. Four screens, so your main screens. 16 to 34.
Ah. Charlie, I'm going to hand over
TikTok,
to you. To
YouTube
ITV, first. Must be.
BBC.
Got a name more than four.
I don't think BBC should be in there.
But 34?
No.
You're just putting Netflix.
That's BBC iPlayer, yeah, rough.
I think you got to work this out together. Come to an agreement.
Go
on
five. YouTube first.
A horse trading.
Yeah, YouTube.
YouTube, TikTok.
Okay, YouTube, TikTok.
What's your number one? What are you going as number
YouTube.
One?
YouTube. I'm okay. Confident on that.
Correct.
Cool. TikTok
second.
Two.
TikTok.
Incorrect. TikTok is third.
Instagram then. 34 is where?
No.
Oh, Netflix. Goodness.
Netflix is second.
Okay. And then TikTok's third.
TikTok's third.
ITV?
Nope.
BBC iPlayer?
BBC.
Thank you. Thank you, Harry.
Sorry,
and
BB.
Then fifth.
ITV.
Disney.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Now, can you do that for? I'm not giving you any points for that. Sorry. you get a point for YouTube. We all know my point systems are broken. Can you do it for 35 plus?
BBC
first. Yeah,
BBC is first. Absolutely right. What's second?
ITV.
Correct. What's third?
YouTube.
Yeah.
Oh my
can
goodness.
Can you see my screen?
I actually can't.
That just goes to show we're closer to that age group.
Oh,
no. Oh my God, it's so embarrassing.
What's fourth?
Facebook.
What's fourth? Fourth should be really easy to get, because what is fourth?
Not Channel 4.
Channel 4, correct. And then fifth, it's... No, it's not Channel 5.
It's Heaven?
Well, it's Sky.
Seven?
Sky.
Sky.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
Sky.
There you go.
is that you?
It's yeah, so very, very different. But I mean, I'm going to share the full report in the show notes as always. But I have a question that is either or. Did TikTok viewing grow from 2023 to 2024 for people aged 16 to 34?
You're leading us down the road of no there, aren't you?
I reckon it grew more for the older lot.
I'm not a real quiz master.
We're saying that there was saturation by 2023 and then that continued into 2024 with very little growth, yeah?
Very little growth.
Yeah.
So growth.
Okay, well, no growth.
There was growth.
No, it actually for 16 to 34, it contracted by 0.6%. So it's like it's just started to taper off.
And where were those numbers started? So what was the?
So in 2022, it was 10.7%. In 2023, it was 12.3%, and this year it was 11.7%. So there was, you know, it's interesting because it's slightly softening, and basically, the final question, true or false, in the first half of 2024, for all audiences under 35, YouTube pulled in more watch time than all of the broadcasters combined.
Yes.
So is that a question?
Yeah, true or false? Yeah.
True.
Yeah, true?
Big yes.
All right, yeah. Very easy then. Yeah, correct.
Okay, well done all of us. Thank you very much, Jack. That wraps up.
You're saying it with this kind of thing like it's the worst thing you've ever had to do. No. But I found that very interesting.
Yes, I also did. We've also got other things to talk about.
I've got a great quote that I wanted to finish it on The last era of media was defined by his master's voice. This, the user-centric era, is defined by our audience's voice. Data, like this from Barb, is the audience's voice. UK viewers are telling us loudly and clearly that what they want and where they want it. The question is now, are those who run UK TV, I assume not the company, listening?
If they listen to the Media Freak podcast, then...
Well, exactly. They can
we're
learn
giving
a,
them
learn
kind
a thing
of free insight here. So, anyway, well, thanks, Jack. That wraps up the news this week. Remember, you can have your say in any of the topics or stories we discuss on the podcast. Email us at info.tmfpod@gmail.com. That's info.tmfpod@gmail.com. Anyway, moving on to our Freak of the Week. So every episode, one of us will talk about a campaign or an activation and will be tasked with justifying why it should be crowned the Freak of the Week.
What are the scores so far? I think I'm like 2-1 up.
2-1, yeah.
2-1 up.
I thought you got one.
I was the one.
Yeah. Okay, so who's got one this week?
ASICS. So they've released their ad, which is called The Desk Break. So it's the indomitable Brian Cox playing a sort of Succession-esque character.
Not
Brian Cox, the physicist.
The universe.
No, not him. He's playing the world's scariest boss, although I would like to see him try and play that role. That would be quite interesting. So he's delivering a PSA to sort of rally office workers against the silent threat to our mental health, which is the desk that we work at every day. He calls on employees to put their mental health first by taking a desk break or short movement break, whatever, during the day. So 360 campaign, as they call it, running across all channels in and out of home. But a couple highlights in there. So he's sat behind a very grand desk. He's wearing a suit and he starts his monologue. He stands up and he delivers a very solemn statement. And it's, look at you, trading your own mental health for free fruit and a wellness Wednesday. Fuck the fruit. And then as the camera zooms out, he's got shorts and trainers on below his sort of suited upper body. But then he goes on to encourage people to step away from the desk and run, jump, roller skate, whatever. I don't care. Just move for your mind. So I like it for a few reasons. It's peak Brian Cox. You know, I'm really, really here for that.
Yeah.
I'm also a huge proponent, as you guys know, of sort of getting active for your body and your mind. But alongside this, they did a study. So it was a study with 26,000 participants, and they revealed a really strong connection between sedentary behaviour and mental well-being, a negative one, of course. But when office workers added just 15 minutes of movement into their working day, the mental health increased by 22.5%, alongside a raft of other key statistics. But they also created what they call the desk break clause. So it's the first employment contract clause for movement. So it gives workers the right, if they implement it, to 15-minute movement breaks throughout the day on top of just regular breaks. Not that I know what a regular break is, but...
So seeing as Biggie was also going to talk about this one, I'm going to go to you first, Jack.
Oh, okay.
Do you think it should be Freak of the Week?
I really like it as a piece of content. I saw it in the wild and it held my attention because it has, again, it's got like someone recognisable playing a character, some interesting storytelling. The delivery is brilliant. It's also very funny. So it's like, it's a piece of entertainment. So it's memorable when it commands attention. I think it links well to Sound Body, Sound Mind, their overall positioning. But I think the comms planning around it needs a bit of work. It's like a nice piece of content, and I like the fact it's got a bit of research and they've got this kind of like the other bits, but I'm kind of like, where's the kind of the next bit? Like if this was, well, maybe this isn't me not having seen the full campaign. So if you have seen that there is partnerships and things, let me know. But to be honest with you, I think you could partner with a social publisher or a radio station or someone to kind of bring this to life and actually kind of encourage people to do it at certain points, you know, pushing the content further, etc. So yeah, it's all right. I'd say it's moderately freaky.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, I liked it, but I originally kind of questioned their approach to coincide with World Mental Health Day. Cause yeah. Okay. It's a good example of purpose driven advertising, but also you're exploiting World Mental Health Day.
Buy some trainers.
But then I saw, whether this is true or not, I didn't fact check this, but they are raising funds for mental health charities. So then I was like, okay, well, you know, if you're doing that, fine.
I think it's an interesting one, as you kind of say. So when I was going to propose it, because I was myself even still a bit on the fence, so I didn't know which way it would go. And so now I'm kind of glad that Charlie took it. But I like the brand positioning from them, because essentially what they've done is they've not positioned Nike or Hoka or Reed. They haven't positioned them as the competition. They've positioned idleness as the competition.
Ooh.
I like that. But you're right. I think there could have been a bit more done with the comms planning around it.
It's a very commsy, crafty viewpoint from you, Bookie.
Mm. I'm basically a strategist now.
Oh my
okay,
God.
So are we freaking of the weeking?
No.
I think there's political voting, and are we going to have a hung parliament again? I kind of think it is, because the content is really strong.
Let them have it. Freak of the week.
Yeah, well done. Okay. Screw you, Bucky.
Wait, hang on. We can't
screw
do freak you. Of the week everything.
It's done.
Right, so on to our main topic. We spoke earlier about UK supermarket brands desperately attempting to tap into the nostalgia of the early noughties, to engage millennials. But what about the post-millennial age? So our very own Media Freak podcast host, Buki, has penned a thought-provoking article for New Digital Age, questioning whether advertising professionals are genuinely prepared to rethink their approaches to connect with younger audiences. So Buki, I will say that I have read it.
Ooh, thank you.
And liked it. But I want your views, Jack, because you are a sucker for a disagreement.
I am. And there are certain points where I did disagree, but overall I actually loved reading it, because it's the sort of insightful, like, evidence, kind of backed up commentary that I wish we had more of on this podcast, frankly. Overall, when you see kind of just conjecture and vibes based think pieces, it's kind of like, oh, but you backed it up with a lot of kind of evidence and little examples and things, which is great. I love the fact that you highlighted the need to refocus on audience, and rather than people going very business outwards and focusing on their own customers and their own kind of products, and just thinking, what do we want to say to everyone, rather than like, what are people actually engaging with and how can we kind of focus on that? I think it's the one thing I would say is, like, you at the start, you were like, yeah, the funnel's from 1898. And I'm like, just because something's old doesn't necessarily mean it's wrong, but it does need some revision. And I think there are, obviously, it's a lot more complicated than then, so the principles still apply. But honestly, I really enjoyed reading it, and I would recommend it to anyone who
wants
it.
I've got some thoughts, Buki. So firstly, I agree with the whole audience-centric narrative and why it's important to kind of recognise the new role for brand, especially around the kind of development of strategies around cultures and subcultures. But then I was thinking, actually, let's apply that to think about brands that have done that already. So Gucci, for example, that we spoke about earlier, now they have spent the last few years actually tapping into those subcultures. Mm-hmm. We've spoken about this in former podcasts, but we've talked about Gucci tapping into NFTs.
Anything the shiny blocks, they've had a go at.
Even also creating kind of sustainability-focused platforms to engage kind of eco-conscious Gen Z consumers.
Mm.
Now, Gucci are changing the way they're marketing to younger audiences, and yet their sales are still declining. So with that considered, can we take that as we need to transform how we're doing it, or just tweak it here and there with Buki's narrative considered?
I would say, in terms of what they're doing, you reeled off so many different things there. They've tried gaming, they've tried NFTs, they've tried sustainability. None of those things did they try authentically. None of those
or
things...
Or consistently.
Consistent. There was no consistency in it. They're just going and flocking to the newest shiny thing, which I think we actually are guilty of doing as an industry. It's like, what's
massively
new? What are we doing? But then you look at LVMH, they stuck hard in sports. They said sports is our play, and they have been doing it, and they are not facing the same struggles that Gucci is facing. So I think they are trying it, but they're not trying it in the way that it needs to be adhered to in order to actually get results. So I do get that, and I was a bit nervous when you said I've applied it. I was like, oh my God, my theory.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it also linked back a little bit to the Barb data thing that we were discussing. The fragmentation of media overall means that you're going to struggle to achieve the kind of broadcast effect that you would have done in the past with your kind of big, heavy reach driving, touch points. Now you've got to really kind of build that up incrementally through smart use of social and streaming, etc. And, you know, where you've got your cultural touch points, if you've got that kind of consistency in gaming, in fashion, wherever it is that you're trying to kind of find your niche, if you continue to show up kind of, you know, consistently there, you're going to make much more of an impact and people are going to actually remember you were there.
Yeah.
So, love the article, and I take on your point and, yeah, consider me silenced.
I wasn't trying to silence you.
No, but then I take that feedback and thank you. The other question I had, well, just more of a, okay, yeah, I hear you. What are the challenger brands doing it right at the moment? Because you referenced a few in the article, but I want to hear some off-the-cuff answers, because I started thinking of some yesterday. The Stanley Cup.
Yeah, Stanley.
That was big. I think
anything that leverages that kind of drop culture that we saw from Crocs, Stanley.
I was gonna say Crocs.
Anything that's doing limited edition drops, they are really tapping into, firstly, it's a sneakerhead mentality, because that is the blueprint that they're all kind of
Lego have done that really well.
Exactly.
Would you say Oatsley has done it?
Yeah, they're all right. I mean, they're kind of like the poster boys of the new cool brand generation, aren't they? Shaking up a boring category, but
there we go.
Right. Yeah.
They applied Buki's thinking.
They did.
Well, thanks so much, Buki. You can check out the article on New Digital Age for all the insights, and we'll put the link in the show notes. Now on to Media Non. So forgive me, Buki, for I have sinned. Who has messaged this week?
I hope that someone else knows what this means, because I actually have no idea what this whole sentence means.
Okay.
So, what's with intermediaries ignoring NDAs and talking to media agency mates about briefs that haven't even appeared yet? I don't understand that as a sentence.
Intermediaries
talking to their agency mates and talking about briefs that haven't even appeared yet. So this is
ignoring NDAs.
Yeah, so a client has spoken to, unless a client is speaking direct to sales houses.
Could be.
That's bad.
You know what? Well, loose lips sink ships. That's what they say, isn't it? And, you know, an NDA, what is that anymore? I don't know.
I take them very, very seriously, Jack. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, always. I mean, I obviously do as well. But, like, you know, clearly people don't. That's the world we live in.
So do you have any advice for them, Charlie? Because I don't know how to help.
I think legal advice is what they need.
Well, I think that whatever's happening there, take NDAs very seriously. Obviously, they're there for a very good reason. And also, you don't want to be the person who gets known that they don't follow NDAs, because trust me, that's not going to be good for you in the long term.
Is that a thing?
I've started sweating now that you guys all think I don't follow NDAs. Don't worry, guys. That one that we signed about that one time, I'm not going to tell anyone about it.
Thanks, Jack.
Jokes.
Well, that wraps up this week. Thanks so much for listening to the Media Freak podcast. If you liked listening to our Freak this week, remember to like, subscribe, tell your friends, and follow us on Instagram for more bad cup of tea making. Is that even a... did that make sense?
Yes. Yeah, I'm going to make a much better cup of tea, and it's going to be really long and awkward this time.
I'm surprised no media nons have come in about that.
I know, I'm
disappointed. It was pretty tragic.
Yeah. Content's not working.
Yeah. keep your media and non-stories coming in. We'll be back in 2 weeks in another location right at the heart of the media scene. And our huge thanks to Craft Media for hosting us this week.
Woo-hoo. You're very welcome.
The Media Freak podcast is a Gimme Sugar production.